This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. You are They Tried to Kill Him, But the Boy Prevailed, of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
Yeah, I'm out here on the road. You can hear it in the voice. Still get this shit off, bro. Look.
That's right. All facts, no cap. We are here to talk about For All the Dogs, and all the dogs are here. It's unequivocal. First of all, Justin Charity, the unsocial mediaable Justin Charity, senior staff writer at The Ringer, is back.
Prevailing. Yeah.
That's correct. That is accurate. Long time, Justin Charity. And then first time, Dylan Green is here from Pitchfork. Dylan, bienvenue.
Peace. Thank y'all for having me, man. This is lofty, man. This is the podcast we're at, so... Yeah,
that's exactly right. That's the right attitude to have. That's the right attitude to have.
We got a lot to talk about with this guy, son. So
that's right. there's no shortage of disco. We could do this probably once a week for the next 3 months and not run out of material. At the beginning, we were listening to 8 a.m. in Charlotte. I know this is not the most important thing about that song, but I do want to start with it because I think it kind of ties into a larger Drake narrative, at least one of several larger Drake narratives. So obviously, like, Conductor Williams is involved in the production of that song. Everybody knows Conductor Williams' affiliation with Griselda and a lot of sort of like lower fi post third wave boom bap, you know, revivalism, et cetera, et cetera. And people hear Drake on a beat like that and think one of two things. I think one, they think, man, this guy's got a great ear for sounds. Like, he can like pull from almost any sonic approach and find a pocket for himself. Or alternately, they think, he's wave jacking. Like, look at this guy just wave jacking, relentlessly wave jacking. I am of the mindset that neither of those things are exactly right here. But I do wonder, since that was the lead single of the record, like that was the introduction before the album came out, what did y'all think when you heard that and that choice? Him on that kind of beat, this kind of song in advance of an album. Dylan, what was the stage setting like for you?
My first thought, honestly, was like, what took him so long? Because Son has been telegraphing that he's been wanting to do something with Griselda forever. I think he and Benny have a song that never came out before. So like, I was just like, okay, so this is our first official like dive into Drake over Conductor Williams. You know, like, he produced one of my favorite Rome Street songs of the year last year. So I was like, oh, so I guess we're at the point now where like every like Chad and Harry is about to come out the woodwork talking about some who's this. But like, he sounded great over it. It was a choice, especially considering that, like, we started out with the SZA song.
Right. Sorry. I should say not the second single. My bad. Good catch. Second single. Yeah, yeah. So did it feel like, because the other thing about that song is, like, obviously it's part of a lineage of Drake records of, you know, some AM and some city, often reflective storytelling raps. But on a lot of Drake albums, you don't really get that until the album. He's not kind of like leading you anywhere with that. That's kind of the dessert in a way on a lot of prior albums. Justin, did you find it meaningful that he led with that? What do you think he was trying to point to?
I receive all Drake albums as like, I don't know. I think they're all like Drake size objects. And I don't know. I don't actually think I received this album that differently than I received like Scorpion or even like Views. Like, I feel like I actually see the form factor now after all the how long has it been? Like 5 decades of Drake albums, right?
That's correct. Since before I was born.
Yeah, no matter what wave he's on, the pattern that is the Drake album is like so clear in my mind. And it doesn't really matter at this stage of his career, like, oh, what new producers is he working with? Oh, what did he lead with as the pseudo single and then the real single? It's like, no, the shape of this thing is like unmistakable to me. I've heard this album a thousand times in a way.
And so inherently, and again, we fatigued, I think, sometimes when Drake is someone who does have a set of moves that he goes to. But there can be a fatigue, I think, even in the most enthusiastic embrace of Drake. Often you are enthusiastically embracing a repeat or a recurrence of move. So in essence, you're saying, even if you're the most excited for this album or any other Drake release, the moves that are contained within it, you feel like are established. You almost like take it for granted at this point.
Or it's like you're really grading the album on execution of the moves, not on the idea that Drake is that frequently reinventing what the Drake album is, right? As like a platonic object. You're grading them on execution. I think that's how I grade Drake.
It was really interesting to have these first two singles. Those are like the extremes of Drake to me. You got like the super duper contemporary R&B sad boy stuff. And then you have This Is Me grabbing at this one thing that's already been a scene that I've been like circling low key. And now I'm finally going to like bite at it real quick. And like that, it was interesting to see him kind of lean into those two extremes, just like as the lead in for this companion to a poetry book.
Then the follow-up to that logically is, if Justin is saying, in essence, all these moves are known, they're all known. Was there anything on this album that you found to be novel or unknown or unexpected?
Honestly, him trying to go up against Yeet felt kind of weird. A little bit. Like, it's weird because like it kind of felt like expected, but also unexpected at the same time. Like, when I saw his name on the track list, I was like, so who's he going to sound like going up against? It's like, is he going to do Yeet?
A Yeet flow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a little bit, because like on like a track or two before, there's a song where he sounds exactly like Cardi on like the execution tip. He doesn't sound good doing that to me, you know, like it's like the first time in a while where it feels like he's trying to like catch up. I can't think of many instances where it sounds like Drake's trying to catch up, regardless of how I feel about the song. And like those moments that should have felt novel and interesting on paper, you know, like between that and like him going up with Sexy Red and SZA on their song, which like that might as well just not even be a Drake song.
I totally agree. Let's listen to the Yeet record. This is IDGAF. This is Drake and Yeet on the new album. You light on the waist like a lightsaber. In Seattle, it's just me and Twiz. I hate you boy more than I ever did. You rapping my shit that you never did. My dog in a can like a metal lid. I remember when Yeet came out, very rarely in the 15 years since Drake has been sort of like cementing his innovations, very rarely has some meaningful sub thread of hip hop come out that I felt was not indebted to him in some way, like that he wasn't, that he hadn't like laid at least part of the groundwork for. And I remember when the early Yeet stuff started hitting, I was like, oh, this actually feels like deeply, deeply, almost like anti-Drake in a way, like in terms of its like rejection, like fundamental. I mean, I don't know if it's like unmelodic necessarily, but certainly its relationship to melody is totally different. His relationship to cadence is totally different. Obviously, like as a rapper on a lyrical level, like just like pure gobbledygook, and like literally makes Playboi Carti sound like Nas, you know, like it's just a very, very, very strange, like very, very strange, very post everything. I sort of wondered, like, you know, I know Drake keeps his eyes out and his ears open, and I was sort of wondering, like, how does he reckon with, it's like, it's one thing to reckon with your child who's kind of like you, but like trying a new thing. It's another thing to like be reckoning with an entire, someone who is like fundamentally rejected, like is in opposition to you. And this song to me does feel like it's on Yeet's terms. It's not a Yeet song on Drake's terms. It's a Drake song on Yeet's terms is how it feels.
Definitely. And like, especially considering that, like, the fact that song's blowing up on TikTok right now, and like Yeet's kind of the main character and Drake's like the side character of like the jokes and the animations. Like, that's like, I don't want to say it might as well be a Yeet song, but like he's, Sun is the focal point at this point, you know, like to me at least. And that song is less about Drake than it is about Yeet at this point. And it's because of that.
Okay, here's like a broader philosophical question, right? Which I think that's this idea really, really leads to, which is, look, Drake has said, I'm taking a year off. Like, I've got health issues I want to address. Been on top for 15 summers, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. Are we going to arrive at a point next year, the year after, 3 years from now, where Drake is no longer the main character? He has an accent piece, whether on other rapper songs, in the overall shifting landscape of how hip hop is growing and changing. Drake has done an incredible job, I think, at staying central for a long time. At some point, all people must become accents. Jay-Z is an accent point right now. You know, anybody who you like, all greats become accents. Are we close to that, do you think?
I think I've thought of Drake for a while now as being more of a figurehead, you know, like kind of like a vestigial monarch, like a vestigial monarch figure, right? Like still the monarch, but I don't know. I just feel like rap, I feel like hip hop culture has just changed so much in the past, like 5 years even, right? Where things are so diffuse and street level in this way that like Drake used to be really good, I think, with engaging with a lot of that and kind of subsuming a lot of different trends and a lot of different sounds in himself. Whereas, like, I don't know, I feel like the last few years of Drake, I've thought of him more as somebody who's like, I guess the main character, but the main character in like an otherwise like large ensemble drama that doesn't actually have a main character, because I just don't know that Drake functions the same way that he did circa, like, I don't know. Think of when we were listening to Hotline Bling, right? Like he's not the same figure. He does not serve. It's not even about prominence. It's not about like chart position. It's not about the quantification. It's about, he does not function as the same sort of bottleneck figure, right? He's not the guy that everything has to go through. He's not the guy you have to go through to get on.
He's not for everybody.
Not for everybody.
Right. I mean, there are moments, like, obviously you see what he's doing with Central C. Like, it's clear that there's like some central, like the whatever the Drake kind of like bonus amplification plan is, like Central C has bought in. But I agree, the thing is like so decentralized right now that even though Drake could function in that way, I think for someone, it's not as necessary. And in a bizarre way, I think a little bit about Lil Yachty and Yachty's fluidity and the way that he has reached out to people in different scenes. Like, you know, like Drake's never done like a great Detroit record, I don't think, but like Yachty has. And I wonder if like other people are taking pieces of the Drake playbook and saying, oh, I can be the person who like puts somebody on. I can be the person who like puts a stamp on a scene.
It's so crazy because, like, I'm sure we're going to get to this at some point, but the whole like Drake needs to grow up dialogue, and it's like, it's so funny. It's so funny to me because like, we all know like Yachty is like the king of the teens. That was his whole thing when he first came in. And it kind of feels like Drake's at that point now where he's trying to be king of the teens, or at least the young adults, you know. It almost kind of feels like they've switched roles in that way, especially considering how much Yachty like contributed to like the production of this and Her Loss. And I can't stop thinking about the Cash Cobain record, the one with 21 Savage on it. I mean, like, Cash Cobain, you know, like, shout out to him, he's amazing. I reviewed his last album, the album's so crazy good. But like, hearing Drake do Cash Cobain and Chow Lee's thing, I mean, like, I'm sure it's going to get them new fans because like the net's wide enough that it's going to pull in people no matter what. But like, as someone who's fairly well versed in that style, I'm like, this is kind of not good, you know, like, so, you know, like everything's new to somebody and I'm not here to trash on that. But it's like, I don't know that like that song for people who already knew about like Cash Cobain, that's not going to be like, oh, this is like the moment.
It's not canon Cash Cobain.
Right.
There like, it is. Like, it's canon by dint of scale, but it's not canon. If anything, I thought it was diminished version of a Cash Cobain record. Let's listen to it. So this is Calling For You. It's Drake and 21 Savage. It comes very early on the album. Let's take a listen.
Yeah, passion in my cup. And Addy in my system. See a op, I'ma hit him up. Yeah, he gonna be a victim. I was trying to dance with the bitch. Couldn't keep my hands off her hips. No, she spent some bands on the fit. No, I told you that she really wanted one crow. Yeah, she advanced with the shit. And I got a chance with the bitch. Love a boy, romance with the bitch. Couldn't even put my mans on a bitch. Like, damn.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm David Marchese.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And we're the hosts of The Interview from The New York Times.
David and I have spent our careers interviewing some of the most interesting and influential people in the world.
Which means we know when to ask tough questions and when to just sit back and listen.
And now we've teamed up to have these conversations every week. We'll try to reveal something about the people shaping our world.
And we'll get some great stories from them, too.
It's The Interview from The New York Times. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So the thing that's striking to me about this song is, again, I agree with you. I don't think it's a great record, and I don't think it's a great Cash Cobain record necessarily. It might be the record that helps Cash Cobain become an A or A minus level producer, right? Like, it might be that, but I don't know that in and of itself it's the grandest achievement. But I will say, when we talk about Sexy Drill, or like whatever we're calling it, right? Like, when we talk about that, if 6 to 12 months ago you had said to me, like, name a style that Drake is gonna get on and like find a way into, like, I would have written the words sexy drill and like sealed it in an envelope and like very like theatrically ripped it open on the podcast right now. And be like, ha-ha,
that's real, I showed you.
Like, you know, like wax seal, like waxed in the background. Like, I absolutely would have done that. But here's what, and I want to talk, I think this is a good moment to talk about kind of like, what is the point of an album at this specific moment? When I thought about For All the Dogs, and by extension, Certified Lover Boy, but when I thought about this album, especially in relationship to what Drake did last year, which is a very sonically focused one or one and a half sonic idea Drake album, and then Her Loss, it's presented as slightly a more minor project because it's a collaborative album. And also 21, as much as I love 21, 21 is not playing at the same vibrancy as Drake, broadly speaking. But I remember thinking last year, like, what if this is just what Drake does from now on? Every 6 months, here's 6 to 8 songs of this. Here's 6 to 8 songs of Sexy Drill. Here's 6 to 8 songs of post-trap. Here's 6 to 8 songs of dance music. Here's 6 to 8 songs of Afro swing. That to me feels like potentially an incredibly fruitful way for Drake to think about making music right now. And having that idea after last year, I arrived at For All the Dogs and I was like, we know all the moves. There's good stuff. There's mid stuff. But I was like, I feel like there's a missed opportunity a little bit. So I wonder what do y'all think the point of a Drake album should be in 2023 and moving forward?
Man, I honestly don't know at this point, because like, I was listening to this earlier and I think the worst parts of this album, he sounds bored. It sounds like more of an obligation than it usually does. Like, he just kind of like came out to like do the thing, and you know, like, he's playing the villain just because like he has to. There are quite a few songs here where it just feels forced. Regardless of whether you love or hate Drake's music, the good stuff, you can at least be like, hey, like, this is fun. You know, like, it sounds like he's having fun. Sounds like he's having fun being an asshole. It sounds like he's having fun waving the misogyny card in front of everybody's face, you know, like, and here it just feels like He just kind of like woke up and just like did it, as opposed to like wanting to do it. Whatever he wants to do moving forward, I just want him to have fun with it. Make it fun and make it sound cool. Keep the effort up, or just like don't come at all. That's just kind of where I'm at with it.
There's a version of Drake who, you look at him, right? You look at when he does the thing where it's like, once every 6 months he pops out and he's like, I'm going to make an X album. Right. And that's a version of Drake that just seems like a guy who really loves music. You know what I mean? Just really loves listening to music, playing around with music. And like, yeah, he likes being the biggest rapper in the world, but he loves music. Right. Whereas the Drake that makes the big blockbuster, you know, Disney sized, event album is often a guy who seems like he it's like a combination of seeming like he hates music, actually, and also seeming like he is more so concerned with marketing the thing, right? I always feel like I always come away from a Views or a Scorpion feeling like, man, 90% of the effort of getting this thing in front of me was marketing it and not really like making it, or there's a level of like, I don't know. I feel like the big Drake albums are when the sort of over the top pretentious Drake comes out, right? Like I always am thinking of that first track off of Views that sounds like a like horrible James Bond theme for some reason. And it's like that version of Drake always seems like the version of Drake that's wildly out of touch with the other version of Drake that John described. And you're right. It's like it becomes more clear with time that, yeah, if Drake were to age gracefully, it would be in the direction of mixtape Drake. And it's just not, it's never going to be, I don't know. I don't know how he keeps painting himself into this corner over and over again. It feels like a corner he's done since Views.
But let me ask this. On this album, what is the song or what are the songs that feel like the overly deterministic songs? Like, what are the songs where you're just like, you don't need to make this, bro. Like, it's cool. Like, which ones jump out at you like that?
I think Virginia Beach is like that. Like, Virginia Beach is doing the whole, like, Tuscan leather thing. Like, again, it just feels like so much of a wind-up, and yet it's simultaneously, you know, the classic pretentious Drake intro, and yet it feels so low effort to me. I feel like the first 15 minutes of the album sounds so paint by numbers safe to me, and then you only get into sort of that messier, wilier Drake when you get to the end of like First Person Shooter, and then for the rest of the album it's kind of like scattershot, right? Like sometimes you get that Drake that we want and sometimes you get pretentious Drake lore Drake.
I think it's safe to say, or at least Justin and I agree, the first part of this album, first third or half of this album, is lesser than the back end. Dylan, what do you make of that?
You're like, I'm looking through the track list now, and I think most of my favorite songs come in through the end. I actually really love Amen with Tizo Touchdown. This is maybe the most I've ever enjoyed Tizo Touchdown on record, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I agree. I really struggle with that album.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel
like. But I actually really do like the Chief Keef song. The Bad Bunny song is maybe the worst. It might be my least favorite song on the album and maybe one of Drake's worst songs ever. But like, of course, like Rich Baby Daddy is amazing. You know, like that song is like so dope. And it's dope because of Sexy Red and SZA, like I was saying before. It has almost nothing to do with Drake. I'm like less high on First Person Shooter than everybody else seems to be. But I would say First Person Shooter is a good barometer for like, yeah, this is where things start to pick up.
Yeah, I agree with you just about that song. Like, it was very strange to see people talking about how intense or how much they loved that song. And it really, upon first listen, had not at all stuck with me. And it's like, you know, look, we're very fortunate to be in a place where like you could have a song like this that has like a good or very good J. Cole verse and good or very good Drake verse and be like, it didn't really stick with me. You know, that just means we're living in an abundance of relatively good music from these people. But I like you, did not. That's not like like if anything, for me, it picks up at 7969 Santa. What I think I was most excited about on this album, and obviously Drake indicated on some level, like, this was going back to the old Drake and don't tempt me, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, I do think there is good storytelling, like classic wounded Drake storytelling rapping on this album. Let's listen to a little bit of 7969 Santa. Baby,
dolls will be dolls, though we may roam.
This will be an interesting pivot point to talk about some of the bigger, like, discourse arguments about this album and about Drake. But, like, obviously, dating back to, like, 09, 2010, 2011, for me, a signature Drake tactic is sharp, first-person, detail-oriented storytelling in which he, in the world, a heroic figure, but behind closed doors indicates that he is, in fact, a victimized figure. And like, you can argue about the legitimacy of that or the ethics of that all day long. But as art, I always find it very compelling. And I think there's good stuff along that line on this album. And if anything, I think what this album will be remembered for are those kinds of songs. Whereas on other prior omnibus Drake albums, Certified Lover Boy, Scorpion, Views, those albums I think are going to be more remembered for their Big Ten hits, these kind of crowdsourced, how do we have the biggest marketed record, or sonic experiments. I don't think this album will be remembered for sonic experiments. And I don't know that even like the big hit of Slime You Out is like really a big Drake hit. It's like in the style. It's like a YouTube, like big Drake hit type beat. It just happens to be made by Drake, you know? So I think the storytelling raps, to me, that's what's probably going to end up having legs off of this record. But then that gets to some of this discourse that we've been nodding to or alluding to, which is Drake is still telling the same kind of stories that he was telling 10 to 15 years ago. And is that valid emotionally or creatively? Dylan, is this valid? Is Drake allowed to still make these kinds of records?
He's a grown up. He can make whatever choices he wants. I feel like he's kind of like consigned himself to just like doing this forever. He, you know, like obviously he's achieved much success by doing this and just kind of updates the formula and just figures out like, oh, like how can I make this sound more appealing to people who are 25, 24, 23, 22 now? It's valid, but it's just not very like exciting or like interesting to me. Like I feel less compelled to come back for that kind of stuff. One thing I've been noticing a lot about Drake is that he's just kind of been like super, Drake's been very apolitical his whole career. I want to be frank. I don't want to hear Drake's opinion on Israel-Palestine. I don't want him to be Kendrick. I don't want him to be Jay-Z. I don't want him to be No Name. I don't want him to be Billy Woods. I don't want him to be Silk Money. I don't want him to be Immortal Technique. I want him to be Drake.
Oh, please don't be Immortal Technique. Jesus. Like, I can't believe you came on podcast. Unbelievable.
Like, who else would you want him to be, Dylan?
Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Oh, man.
That was wild. I just had to be clear. Wow.
I want him to make stuff that works for him. And if people like that, cool. Like, it's valid. It's just kind of boring.
This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Do you think part of the reason that people are pushing back against this Drake idea right now, which is that you haven't changed, you haven't grown, is part of the reason that they're doing it now on this album in this year? Because historically, even if Drake has not necessarily iterated very heavily on subject matter or lyrical form, what he does iterate on is sonic approach. And so if you are cloaking a similar lyrical approach in new sonic approach, that feels like growth or change or evolution. But because maybe the production on this record is not as forward-looking or as vibrant or diverse as on previous Drake omnibus-type records, people are left with the words. And if you're the type to be like, damn, your words really sound like they did 10 years ago, this is your moment, kind of. Do you think that's part of what's happening here?
I think you're giving a lot of credit to people for a lot of meticulous discernment about music that those people often have never demonstrated having in their life.
Okay, well then in that case I withdraw everything, because if there's something I never want to be accused of, it's giving too much credit to people, especially people who just tweet. I do not wish to give those people credit, so I take it all back.
But I think it's more like, I honestly think, and I never thought I'd have occasion to compare Drake and Eminem, but here we are, right? I feel like it's just a version of what happened with like Eminem, right? Where it's like objectively what happened, right? A lot of people grew out of Eminem, but from their perspective, they frame their experience with a rapper they've known for a long time with like, why don't they grow up? And my response as Drake's defense attorney in this instance is, why don't you grow up, right? Like it's sort of like Drake is a brand, right? It's totally fine as a listener to grow out of liking Drake. Like we all grow out of liking things, right? I think it makes way more sense for the increasingly disillusioned Drake fan to accept that they need to get comfortable with the idea that they're X number of years older than they were when they just sort of like uncomplicatedly stand Drake than it is to suggest that Drake needs to start making, you know, records his age, whatever that even means. I just think that that's kind of an unreasonable demand.
Are you suggesting that Drake should sell all physical copies of this album with a mirror? Because a lot of y'all need to look at yourselves. A lot of y'all need to look at yourselves.
No, but I do think it's important because I think Drake is this artist for a long time. There's almost been the two Drakes, right? The Drake according to the Drake stan and the Drake according to the Drake critic. And what really just feels like has been happening since Certified Lover Boy specifically is that like all of the Drake fans are sort of 10 years late to complaints you could have made about Drake in like 2011. But they also don't have the humility and the self-respect to sort of acknowledge that, like, okay, like we kind of like yelled at all the Drake critics for a solid like 10 years of his career. So now we have to kind of like make this totally revisionist kind of criticism of Drake that just, I don't know, a lot of criticism of a lot of the Drake stuff since CLB has felt false to me for this reason. It feels like a really roundabout way of being like, I don't know, of like conceding arguments that people don't want to have to explicitly concede to people who have been writing more critically than Stanishly about Drake.
Okay, so I have three things. One, the people who were making the anti-Drake arguments 10 years ago oftentimes were making what I would consider to be formal anti-Drake arguments, which is just like, this blend of hip-hop and R&B, rapping and singing, is not valid. This subject matter, emotional wounded, victimized, this doesn't belong in the genre. And I always felt like the people who were making those arguments were holding the genre back, broadly speaking. Like that's obvious. And so I don't even know if the contemporary naysayers are really naysaying in the same way that the naysayers of a decade ago were. I don't know if that's true, but I do think that because there was so much naysaying a decade ago, all the stuff that people are mad about now has been litigated. It's been litigated with different people. It was like, it's like we tried it. We went to court in California and now we're just going to court in Oklahoma. You know, it's like, and we're going to go to court in Alabama and then we're going to go to court in Michigan. But it's like the same case, right? Like it's their state cases at this point. That's one thing. Two. Okay. So here's the other thing with the Eminem thing. And I think that's actually really, really right. Cause I think there are a lot of people who loved Eminem in like 2000 who were like, I cannot believe Eminem is saying these things in like 2009. Here's the only thing. First of all, those people also need to buy a mirror. That's number one, because it was always there. But the other part of it is you could honestly, earnestly contend that later Eminem is genuinely lesser product than early Eminem.
Yes. Yeah. Both things can be true for sure. Absolutely.
It is reasonable to be like, you know what? If the product is lesser, it frees us up to have the argument about the content because the overall product is lesser. But the Drake product is, look, it's not 2011. It's not, it's not 2013, but it's like, it's still pretty good. And so it does feel a little bit disingenuous. And as far as people falling out of love with Drake, I agree. It does feel like Eminem, but it also feels like fans of like, people who grew up on emo bands and then they're like 40 and they're just like, man, these emo bands, their new stuff doesn't hit. It doesn't hit the same way. And it's like, well, of course it doesn't hit the same way. Like they've changed. You've changed. It doesn't invalidate the form and what they excelled at. It's just like you're allowed to move and you're allowed to move in different directions. Anyway, I'm yammering.
Well, I'm going to be honest. I haven't thought Eminem was worth anything since like 07.
Fine take. A totally fine take.
2023 Drake is definitely better, or at least more interesting to me than 2023 Eminem. There's also like a whole generational divide between the two of them. Like M's 50, Drake's pushing 40. There are two different levels and there are two different tax brackets. I would imagine that Eminem's probably quite a bit richer than Drake. I don't know that Drake has a song that's worse than Eminem's Stepdad for Music to Be Murdered By. So I'm a very critical Drake person, always have been, but he does not have a song worse than Eminem's Stepdad. That's maybe one of the worst songs I've heard in the last decade. I don't know what they were thinking. That's an Alchemist beat too. Sorry, I'm gonna go off on that all night if I don't think about it.
When y'all are watching this, you know, nth wave Drake discourse online, do you think, like, obviously we talk about what's age appropriate for him to rap, we're talking about misogyny, accusations. Do you feel like any of the discourse topics, hashtag topics, that he's actually guilty of? Like, are there things where you see the kind of blowback and say, actually, yes, it'd be good for him to engage differently in this way?
The misogyny, for sure. I think it's cartoonish. I mean, like, it's always been something that I think people need to grapple with, especially in rap. But like, it feels like particularly bitter and cartoonish and like antagonistic, like more than it has ever. And, you know, like, I've talked with a lot of people about this in the last couple of weeks. I was thinking back on Paul Thompson's review of Her Loss and for Pitchfork, and he mentioned in that piece, shout out to Paul, obviously, love you, Paul. He mentioned that, like, it kind of feels like Drake is just like turning a dial that says misogyny up to 11 and like looking at fans for approval. And like, that's what the entirety of this project sounds like to me. You know, like it's almost like he's like goading people into being like, I dare you. And that's just like boring and it's cheap. On that tip, I also reviewed the tour for Vulture, and there's a bit in the tour where the fake Drake comes out and he's in bed and he's flipping through channels, and then it ends with him going to bed, and then a Peter Pan balloon floats through the stadium. And that's just kind of him being like, oh, y'all want me to grow up, huh? And it's like, it just feels edgelordy, man. Like, why are you trying to like goad and provoke people like you're 16 years old? I don't want him rapping over Premiere beats about taxes, but you got to find the middle ground somewhere at some point. Like, you can't be king of the teens forever. Please, like, find some middle ground. Like, I would imagine Sung would want to concede a tiny bit. I don't know. I can't speak for him, but
here's my big picture thought on that, which is like, I think in the same way that we were talking about, like, with the Eminem stuff a minute ago, like, if we were to literally just line up words of this album and words of, like, I don't know, More Life and words of So Far Gone, like, would they be radically different? I genuinely don't know. I have not done this. I have not set out on this task, but it's an honest question. All right. But Justin, you're about to say something.
Yeah. Cause to me, again, it's sort of like to your earlier point when you were saying, right, that early on, there was a kind of Drake critic that was just formally objecting to Drake. And they were really making arguments that were about the singing and the rapping and what is he doing, right? But I do think that, like, a lot of it was more people who were opposed to, like, the Drake mood, the kind of, like, Drake first-person vindictive diary writer mode. And to me, it's just, like, the criticism of a lot of elements on this, it just makes it like, did I hallucinate the entire, if you're reading this, it's too late. Like, I just feel like I remember not only these earlier phases of Drake where, like, these, again, he's like whiny and vindictive and bitter and sour. And I don't know. It's like, they're all here. They're all on every other Drake album, all of these elements of him, and people liked it. Like, I think that's the thing. When I talk about that kind of, like, retrospective, kind of revisionist way of talking about all this stuff since CLB, I think that's what I'm saying, right? It just feels kind of like, no, people liked this at one point, and they just don't now. I think it's overstated the degree to which, like, this is some huge shift or even an escalation of a dial. I don't think people are keeping it all the way real with themselves when they make that out to be what's going on.
Okay, so then that, maybe this is the final, now we're at the landing zone of the episode, which is, okay, let's take the discourse and the tone of discourse as an indication that there is, at least for some people, they are at the end of the Drake experiment. That obviously Drake is still extremely popular. He had a huge first week, you know, big number one single. It's like there's no shortage of Drake enthusiasm, but support is weakening in certain constituencies, right? Is this now, are we just in the decline era? Like 5 years from now, will we be like, Drake will put out an album. We're just like, we don't need to talk about that record. Is his relationship to the center of the discourse fragile? And can it be taken away?
He feels too big to fail at this point. I mean, obviously numbers aren't the end all be all with any of this stuff, but like he just did these huge numbers. Like Drake is, it's going to be funny to put it this way, I guess, but like Drake is like a relic of like, he's a relic of monoculture. He's like, for all intents and purposes, like still one of the biggest rappers on planet Earth. He's kind of like Kanye in that way, where like regardless of what he does, everyone's going to be talking about him. I think he would need to put out something like colossally awful. And even if he did put out something colossally awful, like people would still want to talk about it. He's just like a politician that like people just don't know how to unseat. You know, like that's what you said in your review. You know, like it's like that's where he's at now. Like I don't know what it would take for him to not be a part of the discourse. I don't want to say he's Teflon, but it feels like it would really take like a earth shattering, once again, to go back to Kanye, like something like that for us to be like, okay, maybe it's time to stop talking about everything this dude does. But he's not there yet.
We talked a little bit before about how like Yeat is maybe like one of the first folks to really feel like truly post Drake in a way, like post. And I think really because of Drake's ubiquity, his fluidity, his ability to adapt to a variety of sonic approaches, like obviously, you know, we know enough to know that hip hop sonics maybe evolve even faster than hip hop flows. Like, and so if you as a rapper can find your way into different sonic pockets, you probably have an opportunity to have a longer career and a more diverse career than someone who just, you know, stays in the same kind of pocket over and over and over again and can't adapt. And maybe this is a point to talk about like Playboi Carti or somebody who is incredibly popular, but it feels like a niche kind of popularity, even though Carti can sell out Madison Square Garden and any number of arenas, right? And is a complete internet figurehead for like a certain kind of hip hop fan. No individual has mirrored the level of Drake's success as a standalone, but there might be like a few Playboi Carti type figures of like sonic approaches that feel not necessarily indebted to Drake. And I think that's partially because of like the fragmentation of hip hop and the streaming landscape. And I think because of that, it's harder for any one individual to get to the level of what Drake was. But also you have to have a sonic innovation that's so radically different that it basically renders everything that came before it a little bit irrelevant. And nobody has really come with that yet. At least not in the last like 5 years, it doesn't feel like.
I don't know that that's his fail case necessarily. Like, I guess the contrast I would draw, right, would be Taylor, right? Like, someone like Taylor, like, I think at least Drake has proven that he's not going to be able to do that. He's not going to be able to do the thing where it's like at all the points where he's supposed to, you know, quote unquote, supposed to, you know, take a backseat or recede a little bit, he somehow only becomes bigger. He's not going to be able to do that. And I think it's kind of like exposing maybe the fault in what is otherwise the sort of great strategy or strength of Drake in the 2010s, right? Which is his ability to synthesize like a lot of different new entrants into the field of hip hop and a lot of new threads in hip hop sound and in other sounds, right? And synthesizing them into himself. And I guess now it's like, yeah, the problem with that being the kind of hyper consumer that Drake is that you get older and you're just going to run into more Yeats. Taylor can do the Taylor thing because Taylor is, we can talk about her producers, we can talk about her collaborators, but at the end of the day, Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift. And she has this kind of like very distinct authorial presence. And I think Drake kind of ends up feeling like his game of whack a collaborator, I do think in the long run that is going to like dilute him. And it is why your strategy, John, that you outlined at the beginning of the pod is probably good for him, right? Is to like, if he's going to do that, if he's going to keep dabbling, if he's going to keep, you know, being like, oh, I'm interested in this scene, he needs to keep it to kind of like low stakes projects, because I don't think that that mode where he actually does sort of work okay is it just doesn't work well when he marries it to, again, the big event album where he makes it feel like the stakes are huge, only for the album to feel kind of like a 2.5.
Especially considering that, like, you know, this is his fourth album he's dropped in 2 years. The question becomes like, is this sustainable? Drake's kind of tripping over himself, like on the Cash Cobain, the Yeet, and the Playboi Carti songs. Like, he doesn't sound as adept as he once did. And I don't know if he's like getting worse at it or if he's just getting older, but like, you know, like the question really does become for me, like, is this sustainable? Like, you know, like, might it be like John said, just like might he just need to hyper focus on these like smaller projects? He clearly wants to keep up with the kids. Like, that's important to him for whatever reason. This is the first time that it feels like he's trying too hard to keep up.
Well, I have some good news as we go out. I have some good news, which is, and to pick up on your idea about how he needs to keep up with the kids. Boy, he sure does, because literally just a few hours ago, Adonis put out My Man Freestyle. And if you are worried that Drake is insufficiently keeping up with the kids, well, Dylan, this is for you. Because why worry about keeping up with the kids when you can have a kid and then that kid can make music? So for all I know, Drake is taking a year off to focus on his stomach. First of all, sidebar, I also would like to take a year off to focus on my stomach. If anyone in human resources is listening, I would enjoy that, please. Like, I would like to speak to someone. I don't know which part of the healthcare package covers that, but I would like to look into that as well. So Drake, taking a year off to focus on his stomach and perhaps executive produce some records by his son Adonis on that Lil Romeo wave. That could be what's coming next. So at the end of this, we are going to play a little bit of Adonis's My Man Freestyle. But first of all, thank you, Dylan. Thank you, Justin.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the wrestling match as always. So we're going to hear Adonis at the end of the episode. Thank you for listening to Popcast. You can listen to every episode at nytimes.com/popcast. Popcast Deluxe, the YouTube show with me and Joe, is at tinyurl.com/popcastdeluxe. Email us popcast@nytimes.com with questions. Get in the Discord or the Facebook. It's tinyurl.com/popcastfacebook or Popcast Discord. Subscribe anywhere you get your audio content, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, etc. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. This is My Man Freestyle, Adonis Graham.
Talk to my man like that. I like it when you like it. My man. My man. You know which one you want. I don't care which one you want.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.